They have been working on this project for almost 2 years. Their research interests lie in global health and policy. Go ahead, please.
Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon. I'm Jennifer Nelson, and this is my colleague, Michelle Del Toro, and we'll be talking about planning, evaluating, and implementing a water system in rural Dominican Republic. And we have no disclosures at this time. Every 8 seconds, a child dies of a waterborne illness. That means, by the end of our presentation, more than 110 children will have passed. Michelle and I have worked with Engineers Without Borders, case chapter, for the past 2 years, trying to make a small change in these statistics. Our first trip to this community in August 2006, and this presentation takes us from then until now. The study was conducted during the planning phase of the project, and it looks to examine social, economic, environmental, and behavioral factors of disease and their outcomes. Things that we looked at were the type of housing materials, for example, what type of walls you have, what type of floor you have, do you burn your trash, what type of things do you cook with, and to see if these were associated with different types of illnesses. The other part of our study was to set up infrastructure and necessary metrics to evaluate these health systems once they are completed, and this is a very long process that Michelle will talk about in the second part of our presentation. The methods for this study were to collect and analyze public health demographic and clinical records from La Clínica Familiar de Cruz de Blanco, and also to pilot household level surveys that would be used prior to implementation to determine the baseline level of health. The next slide we have talks about the household data. Here you can see the demographics of the people that we work with in Cruz de Blanco as of 2002 and 2003. The clockwise pie chart follows from birth till death the populations that we're working with. As you can see, from 1 to 4 years and 40 to 64 years is the biggest part of our population. And interestingly enough, we have more males than females in our population, which is the opposite of what we have when we're talking about clinical visits in the U.S. The number of households we're looking at is 309, and as you can see, the number of clinical visits was 469, and repeat visits for illness were cut off. After analyzing these data, we found that the most prevalent illnesses reported in Cruce were acute respiratory infection, parasites, hypertension, influenza, and urinary tract infections. To better understand how these things were working and used for our analysis, we divided these things up into two areas, one by mechanism and one by organ system. The ones we were most interested in were the infectious mechanism, as you can see, this was the majority of our cases, and also pulmonary and GI illnesses, which again were the majority of our cases, which directly relate to our water system, which we will talk about in our discussion. Some other illnesses to note were genital urinary was also a high prevalence, followed by cardiovascular, and then the others are a much slower part of, or a much smaller part of our population. And I want to give you a brief description of the type of households that we see every day when we work in the Dominican Republic. I'm sure this isn't news to most of you who've done international work, but it was of interest to us to see which one of these things, if any, had an association. Most houses had walls built of wood, roofs built of asbestos, and floors built of dirt of wood also. However, there is a significant portion of these homes that have dirt floors. The most popular type of toilet was the private latrine, and unfortunately, 75% of our homes we're looking at had 2 rooms or less. As far as housing utility goes, we have 68.8% of them have a working tap outside their house. But interestingly enough, 51% of them are still using a river source to gather their water. Electricity, we should also note, is given to them for free by the government, and 62% of those houses have electricity. As far as practices go, 60% of the population uses a wood stove, 84% of them throws their trash outside, and the majority of these houses neither have animal or insect vectors present. This is a map that the clinic actually used when the program was still being funded to map the houses and link them to their clinical data. This map was very helpful to us to map out where some of these diseases lie. We used the previous slide's demographics to create classifications for our houses into the most basic, modern, and intermediate, and then further use them to dichotomize the variables into basic and modern housing for our chi-square analysis. It was also interesting because we had this map that we wanted to look at if there was a bias where if they were closer to the clinic, were they going to the clinic more, and also if the type of housing characteristics varied across location. As you can see, Sector 1 is 15 minutes away from the clinic, which has 23% of the population, and more than 40% of our population actually lives 40 minutes away from the clinic. This is a map showing the area that we work. The little yellow point is the clinic. Right next to it, you see the bigger building, and that's a Coffee Growers Association. Each sector is outlined by the circle, as you can see here. The white line you can faintly see at the top is the proposed new pipeline for our new system, and there's a red line over there that you can also kind of see, and that's the pipeline for the old system that they currently have, called El Rodeo. More details on that to come. Here you can see the breakdown of illnesses and types of housing by sector, a couple of the types of housing by sector. As you can see, a lot more of these illnesses were being reported if you lived closer to the clinic, which led us to believe there could be some kind of bias in our study. But also, interestingly enough, there's much more modern housing in Sector 1 versus Sector 4 when you look at the extremes of these variables. There's almost double the amount of houses in the fourth sector that are basic as compared to only 8% in the first sector. So the next thing we wanted to do was run a chi-square analysis to look at the association of these illnesses and housing features. Now, most of our results were actually quite counterintuitive and kind of surprising. The ones that, you know, go with most conventional thinking is that the houses that were most basic reported more GI illnesses, and the houses that also used natural water reported more pulmonary illnesses. However, we found that houses that had better walling and better flooring reported more GI illnesses and more infectious illnesses. And across the board, houses that had electricity also reported to the clinic much more often. And we feel like this is mostly due to the fact of the map you can see before, of just the breakdown of where these houses are and their duration, their proximity to the clinic. However, we feel that a lot of our data was reduced because we had to analyze these things at the household level instead of the individual level. So therefore, we have developed an instrument that we are going to implement prior to system implementation to see if we can capture some of these things more at the individual level, and because the clinic data was not sufficient at the household level to do this. Some of the most interesting parts of planning come from taking community perceptions into consideration. These are just an example of some of the things we hear when we would go house to house and talk to the people in the community, or when we had community meetings. The community actually went ahead and created a water committee that communicates with us to talk about what they want, what they don't want, and what is feasible for them. As you can see, we have a huge variety of understanding of how these vectors work as far as infection goes, and even, you know, families that do understand how they work, they're still choosing maybe not to boil their water or to boil their water. And one of the starkest things that you'll notice when you're in the community is there'll be two neighbors right next to each other, and one person can explain to you exactly how a vector works and how it's so important to boil your water. And the next person, I remember sitting there, and they took out a cup of water, and I asked them, well, how do you clean your water? And they put it on the table and said, well, we just wait till the parasites to fall, and then it's okay to drink. So there's a big association with how water looks and rust, and if the water is drinkable. I think one of the most important takeaway lessons that we look at is our last paragraph, or our last quote, where they told us when we were trying to build our system, we want to tap at every home, just like you have in the United States. We deserve it. And now Michelle will talk about how we use these community perceptions and baseline data to move forward in our project.
Thank you, Jenny. In deciding what to build, EWB had to take into consideration long-term versus short-term solutions, available resources and costs, and community buy-in. Based on our technical and cultural assessment, EWB proposed four options for the community of Cruce de Blanco. We had a rainwater catchment, repairing the current water system of El Rodeo, creating a household-based version of rainwater in every house with a point-of-use chlorination plan, and building a new aqueduct of Los Misingueses. Given the community feedback that we got and all the information that we collected from them, the group determined that rainwater catchment was actually not a feasible solution because of the hurricanes in the area could destroy the tank. Also, the community felt that the rusty pipes of El Rodeo were making them sick, so they said, even if you repair it, we're not going to use this water. And the household-based system of the rainwater catchment, even though it would provide water in every house, it proved to be not sustainable enough for that to lead to economic development. So given the challenges that we have faced, this is a picture of El Rodeo. So this is us repairing the system and all the damages throughout. So the long-term solution that we chose and the community actually voted on or said this is what we would like to do is Los Misinguises. And given the challenges that we have faced, our group has affectionately named it the Mess and Guesses. And it is actually the largest undertaking by any student group from EWB. So it is going to provide 150,000 liters a day per home. It's going to have an intake. It's going to be a 5-kilometer pipeline going up from about an elevation of 1,100 meters. It's going to have two brake pressure tanks, sedimentation tank, a slow sand filter, a distribution tank, and taps into every house. So being an undergraduate student and non-for-profit organization, building partnerships has been of essence with this project. It is totaling over $40,000, and we have partnered with the CDEE, which is the electrical company in the Dominican Republic, Odebrecht, and MWH, who are building a hydroelectric in the Dominican Republic. And they will be footing about 75% of the cost, but for us it's so important because they're also utilizing our designs. So the engineers built this design, and these professional engineers are going to be using them, and we're going to take that back to the community. So since also this project has proven to be a very long project, we have implemented several short-term solutions that have not actually been evaluated. Solar disinfection education, which is disinfecting the water under sunlight for 6 to 8 hours, was piloted in August 2008. We have also taught modules on first aid, nutrition, hygiene, and sanitation, and we also plan to teach about system maintenance and the impacts of environmental health for the community. And as Jenny previously mentioned, we plan to conduct a pre and post household level survey to gather information on the hygiene and sanitation behaviors and attitudes, as well as data on risk factors for respiratory disease. We plan to go back in March 2009 to build that distribution portion of it. As you can see in that picture, we got right before we left in August, and we were really, really happy that the government had started building the intake, because our portion depends on the work that they do up from the 1,100-meter elevation. So we hope to complete the system in June 2009. Finally, this project is about sustainability, and as one of the community advocates, Esteban, said, we can use this for hydroponic farming, for example. It is our way out of poverty. Without water, we have nothing, and this will be our first step. And I would like to thank everyone at CASE, Dr. Frank, Dr. Singer, Professor Brugman, and the Public Health Department in the DR and the CASE Alumni Association and EWB for giving us this opportunity. Thank you.
Thank you. Next we have Sandy Winter. She was born in Zimbabwe, where she lived for the first part of her life. Then she moved to Cape Town, South Africa, where she lived until 2003. Since then, she has been living in Kentucky. Sandy has a master's in health administration, and she's about to finish. She has finished her coursework and qualifying exams toward a PhD in public health administration.